It's At the Letters, Sportsnet's Blue Jays podcast with Arden Zwelling and Ben Nicholson-Smith.
My intent is to listen and learn from everyone, to build upon the foundation that's already in place, and to earn their respect and trust of the people that work here as I go along.
It's At the Letters for Tuesday, November the 3rd in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, on Sportsnet.ca and on iTunes. My name is Arden Zwelling. I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Ben Nicholson-Smith. Ben, it is the dawn of a new era for the Toronto Blue Jays. The Mark Shapiro era has begun. How are you feeling today?
I'm feeling like we know a little bit more about Mark Shapiro now than we did 48 hours ago.
Are you using your time efficiently? Is there not much wasted energy in your life?
I am hoping that there's a lot of wasted energy in my life for the next little while. That'd be nice.
I just want to empower you, Ben. I want to empower you. That's what I want to do.
You know what? Shapiro is he's got a lot of thoughts, and I think he laid them out pretty clearly. But at the same time, I don't think we got a lot of specifics necessarily.
No. I was reading your, and everybody should go on sportsnet.ca and do what I did and read Ben's takeaways from Shapiro's press conference. And, you know, it's just kind of the major things to take away from it. I was just kind of going through them and I was like, geez, like, it's a lot of gloss here, not so much in terms of specifics. Like, he very much just vaguely danced around everything.
Right. Which is the way of most general managers, most presidents. Dave Stewart maybe being the one exception. I mean, he'll get into specifics. The Diamondbacks fans are just loving it. He'll tell you exactly what he's thinking, exactly who he's talking trade with. But I'd say 29 out of 30 GMs basically dodge for a living.
You know, I've just been spurred to just think about process and momentum and, you know, just positive integration.
He didn't say positive integration.
I don't think he said that. He is an encyclopedia of buzzwords. It's really...
Yeah.
Yeah. He really is.
You know what? He's, and Michael Grange made this point, speaking of articles on sportsnet.ca, but where Anthopoulos and Tony LaCava have a certain, you know, came up through the ranks, mm-hmm. and kind of not happy to be here, but an appreciation of the fact that they're in these jobs. Shapiro comes off as very polished. He's someone who has been mentioned as a potential commissioner candidate at times.
Yeah.
He's very experienced, and that showed in his introductory press conference.
You can see why the suits like him, that's for sure.
Yeah. Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Not just the experience, but he kind of gives off an image of a very polished person.
We're going to talk a lot, obviously, about that because that is the big news of the day, and we'll talk about that in the first segment. In the second segment, we'll be joined by John Morosi of Fox Sports, who will talk to us about free agency, about Marco Estrada and what, you know, the Blue Jays, you know, how things might be different now for the Blue Jays as they approach free agency and what they might do coming up, and, you know, maybe talk about managers a bit and see what John always has a lot to say.
Maybe we can ask him what he thinks about Marco Estrada and whether to qualify him.
Maybe we can ask him that. We'll see. Maybe we'll figure, because right now it's me versus you. I would qualify Marco. You would not qualify Marco Estrada. Maybe Sean Morosi can kind of tilt the scales.
I think he'll be able to.
We like that. But, you know, in this first segment, let's talk about, you know, what here's the thing. I think that anybody who was unsure of why Alex Anthopoulos figured he might not fit into the Blue Jays front office going forward got their answer pretty clearly yesterday. When you look at how Mark Shapiro operates, his philosophies, even just how he talks, how he presents himself, just how he does business, it's very clear those are two very different personalities, Alex Anthopoulos and Mark Shapiro. And it's, you know, it's not surprising. Like anybody who, and I, you know, maybe a lot of fans just don't have the benefit of, you know, knowing Alex the way that we do, just from being around the team as much as we are. But if you know Alex at all, you know, he probably wasn't going to fit into that.
Yeah. And so I would agree with you. And I think specifically one of the things that stood out is how much Shapiro talked about collaboration and how he wants everyone from mm-hmm. the Pacific Northwest scout to the intern in the cubicle. He wants everyone to be contributing to a vision and then feeding that information to the GM who makes a recommendation to the president. That's a different process, as I understand it, from the one that the Blue Jays previously had with Anthopoulos.
GMs make recommendations. They don't make decisions, right? That's the way that Shapiro kind of phrased it. And, yeah, you know, and in a certain sense, that's kind of how Alex Anthopoulos operated. But he kind of knew that, you know, all he just had to make sure the money worked. And then he was pretty sure Paul Beeson was going to sign off on it. He just had to make sure it worked with the budget and everything. And then, you know, Alex Anthopoulos could pretty much do what he wanted. you get the sense Mark Shapiro would like to have a bit more involvement on the identifying of players, evaluating of players, and you know, just kind of choosing what the, you know, what course the franchise takes instead of simply, you know, signing off on things.
For sure. And he's going to find a GM who works with that vision. There are going to be a lot of people. This is the only GM opening in baseball right now. There are going to be a lot of people who want to work in that environment. Shapiro, very respected. And he's going to have a lot of interest if he, or when he opens that up. And I would hope that Tony LaCava would be one of the people that he considers for that permanent job. You wrote about Tony on sportsnet.ca yesterday. And, you know, I think you can probably elaborate on this, but I mean, I think that LaCava is someone who has really paid his dues and really shown that he is not only someone who's loyal, but he's someone who's talented.
Yeah, a great story that nobody read on Tony LaCava on sportsnet.ca. Nobody cares about Tony LaCava right now. I understand that. People want to hear about AA. They want to hear about Mark Shapiro. But yeah, Tony LaCava is the interim general manager. He's going to be going to Boca Raton, Florida, and leading the Blue Jays charge into GM meetings. He's, you know, they were sitting in the third floor war room yesterday, making decisions on options and things like that. Him, Andrew Tinnish, you know, Joe Sheehan, you know, Perry Manassian, you know, that whole core group that worked under Alex Anthopoulos are still working together and still probably, you know, it was very much a collaborative process in a way under Alex. I mean, but that's because they were all kind of like-minded individuals, those guys. So they're still kind of driving that bus. But, you know, Mark Shapiro is going to be in and out of those meetings. He's going to be letting them know his thoughts, and they might be different from what Alex Anthopoulos, what his thoughts had been going into this offseason.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that Shapiro, you know, he said that he thought the moves that Anthopoulos made were great trades. But at the same time, I couldn't help but notice how he kept coming back to the point that you always have to have one eye on the future as well as one on the present. So it's not an all-in, let's push everything toward one season. It's a way of distributing your assets, whether those are dollars or prospects, to make sure that you're going to be good now and good in the future. So I didn't get the sense that the Blue Jays are going to trade their current pieces just to make sure they're good down the road.
Yeah.
But I do get the sense that it's very much top of mind for Shapiro's Blue Jays to make sure that they're keeping that pipeline of talent going.
I think Mark Shapiro thought those were good trades with the benefit of hindsight. And I think that, you know, if you had asked him if they were good trades on July 31st, he might have given you a different answer. But I think that, you know, the fact that they did work out and the Blue Jays went, you know, were two games from the end of the World Series, you know, you have to say they're good trades. And he kind of alluded to that. He said, you know, at the time, maybe I would have thought differently, but I can't not say these are good trades.
He did have to say they were good trades.
Yeah.
Because if he didn't, then he really undermines the work that Anthopoulos did, and he feeds into the line of thinking that he ultimately refuted that suggested that he did not approve of those deals. And this is the only way to set that whole narrative to rest, or at least go partway there.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I think those trades really get at, I think, a really crucial difference between Alex and Mark Shapiro. Where, you know, Mark Shapiro, very disciplined, very, very principled, you know, he's almost conservative in a way, where Alex Anthopoulos maybe is a bit more wild in terms of decision making, is a bit more willing to take chances and to really roll the dice. You know, if you kind of look at, like, think about them like investors, right? Like, Mark Shapiro is a guy who's going to, like, he's going to invest in, like, reliable stocks, like safe bets, you know, long term, like, you know, obvious returns. Whereas Alex Anthopoulos might be more willing to bet on a stock that might fluctuate wildly, you know, and more willing to take chances. Both guys might get rich, but they're very different processes and very different, you know, ways of thinking and philosophies.
I might take that a step further and say that actually Shapiro's best investments were the penny stocks, the right trades that he made for undervalued prospects on other teams, Travis Hafner, Shin-Soo Chu. You could point to Brandon Phillips and Cliff Lee and Grady Sizemore. Basically acquiring Carlos Carrasco, a huge stream, Michael Brantley is another one, Carlos Santana. All these guys were relatively unheralded, or I should say most of them were relatively unheralded at the time of the trades. They hit big on those deals, and that's a huge reason that the Indians were able to have the success that they did. So I think that the differences I see between these two guys, they're both big traders, but Anthopoulos succeeded most when he was acquiring star players. And I would say that Shapiro succeeded most when he was acquiring prospects.
Yeah, that is a good distinction. Does Corey Kluber kind of fit into that as
totally.
Well? Yeah, you know, kind of, you know, that's another guy. Like, you know, Mark Shapiro's had a lot of success identifying, you know, undervalued talent with other teams. So I think that's think that's a really good point. What you have to wonder is if Mark Shapiro will operate differently in Toronto than he did in Cleveland, because, you know, he's going to be working with almost double the payroll. In Cleveland, they went through a serious phase of austerity with the Indians where he had to cut back payroll significantly. Like, they went through a couple of years where they were spending only like $62 million on payroll. They just don't have the same revenue as the Toronto Blue Jays, frankly, and they just don't have the same market size and all those things. It's a very different situation. And Mark Shapiro kind of said, you know, like I asked him in the press conference and he was like, yeah, you know, I'd be willing to take on more risk now with more payroll. You know, you're willing to take on more risk. And, you know, maybe that means free agency. Maybe that means locking up your own talent. Like, maybe that means, you know, moving more towards trading for big leaguers. I mean, what do you think that means?
I think it means being selectively aggressive in free agency. Not to sound too much like an evasive general manager and saying that. Yeah. Spent too much time listening to those recordings yesterday when I was writing my article. But I think that you're never going to say, okay, we're going to sign every single free agent. But clearly the Blue Jays have room to sign some top-tier free agents. And, I mean, it's a very wise move, low-hanging fruit, but wise move to just scrap that five-year policy. It was unnecessarily restrictive all along. They've made the decision to do that. So I think if it's the right guy, I think they'd be prepared to spend big. And I wouldn't expect that to happen every year, but maybe every 3-4 years, they take the plunge on a top free agent.
I was listening to Terry Pluto with Blair the other day. And they're saying, he was basically saying that, and Terry Pluto is a guy who's been close to the Indians organization and close to Shapiro really throughout like the entire, you know, 20 years that Shapiro was in Cleveland. And he kind of said that he thinks that Shapiro kind of sees Toronto as, you know, a team that could be a real beast in the American League in baseball, like a team that, you know, that should have more, ability to kind of play like a big boy than it has in the past. And, you know, could be a more streamlined, efficient, but also like, you know, could make a lot more money and could do a lot more big things than it has to this point under Paul Beeston. And that's why he came here. And that's why this opportunity excited him. Because when you look at Mark Shapiro, it's a guy who worked his entire career in Cleveland, and really that's his life's work, and built that all up there. So for him to leave that and go somewhere else, he had to really like the opportunity and like the new challenge. It'll be interesting to see what he turns this club into.
And I agree with you. I mean, this is the kind of market that should be sustainably a big market team. There's no reason that the Blue Jays, Chicago has two teams.
Yeah.
New York has two teams. Los Angeles has two. So Toronto with just one team.
Canada, really.
An entire nation of television viewers and fans and people buying flex packs and jerseys. I mean, really, the Blue Jays should be a big market team and they should be able to spend aggressively and they should be able to raise payroll from where it was in 2014, although we're not sure if that's going to happen.
And maybe that means the Blue Jays start being players in free agency. You know, I think a lot of what's prevented the Blue Jays from doing that is players not wanting to come here. You know, and there's a lot of drawbacks. You know, you have to pay more taxes when you come here. There is still a bit of ignorance, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I just mean that in the meaning of the word. There's a bit of ignorance to what it means to live in Canada and to work in Canada and to, you know, to kind of be an international citizen for a little bit. The experiences of Mark Burley and David Price and Josh Donaldson will change that. Maybe not Troy Tulowitzki's, but maybe that can change that slowly. Winning certainly changes that, and that's something the Blue Jays did this year. But it'll be interesting to see if, you know, maybe the Blue Jays are going to be free agent players now, but Mark Shapiro in his career has never really thought, you know, he feels pretty similarly to Alex Anthopoulos, I think, in that free agency isn't really the aisle you want to shop in, to borrow a term from Alex.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And you can still be a big market team and develop players, and you have to develop players.
Yeah.
I mean, otherwise you're never going to have guys who are, you know, at their maximum running speed. You're never going to have guys who are throwing 96, 97. Those are skills that peak early. If you want to have players like that, you need to acquire them through the draft, through trades. And the Blue Jays are going to keep doing that. But at the same time, free agency can be a weapon for teams. And it sounds as though Shapiro intends to use that weapon, maybe not wildly, but I think selectively.
So let's talk about what we know about what Mark Shapiro has done so far. We know he's made Tony LaCava his interim general manager. Him and Tony go back to Cleveland. I wrote about that on sportsnet.ca about how Tony LaCava was, you know, a really key player in the Bartolo Colon deal, which kind of went down as one of the kind of landmark trades of, you know, of the last, I don't know how many years. I was actually reading your piece on MLB trade rumors yesterday as I was kind of digging into it. Yeah. Back in the day. Can you call your trade rumors buddies and talk to them about the new layout, about this new design?
You don't like it?
Not a fan at all. If you could discuss that with somebody.
You know what? Any power that I might ever have once had on those kind of decisions has disappeared long ago.
Anyway, so Tony LaCava is the interim GM. John Gibbons is going to be back. And John Gibbons' staff have all been invited back, although we haven't had confirmation that, you know, everybody's going to be returning in terms of, you know, Pete Walker and DeMarlo Hale, guys like that. You'd expect them to, but, you know, who knows if other opportunities open up. But what we do know is John Gibbons will be back. So really, and I think that this is what Mark Shapiro is kind of doing. And, you know, he talked about consistency and he talked about, you know, last year, whatever you want to call it, 2015 being a good year for the Toronto Blue Jays. And you shouldn't really tear things down after a good year. I really think Mark Shapiro is going to take one more shot with this core and with this offensive lineup and try to, you know, make some pitching additions and take, you know, one more shot at a World Series next year, you know, certainly at winning the AL East. If things don't go well in the first 3 months of the season, if, you know, halfway through the year, they're, you know, sitting where they were at this year's trade deadline, maybe he starts tearing it down and maybe you start seeing what Mark Shapiro wants this team to be. But I think that kind of the Alex Anthopoulos, Paul Beeston core, if you want to call it that, is going to get one more shot at this.
Yeah, as they should. Yeah. I agree. It's a good team. They could use pitching. They're going to get some pitching, I fully expect. And they're going to go into next season as one of the favorites to win the AL East. The Nationals can tell you how much that is worth.
Yeah.
It's nothing, but yeah. I think fully worthy of another shot.
And it's interesting because you know that Mark Shapiro is just itching to start putting his fingerprints on this franchise. You know, he's just itching to start trying to making it his, you know, and investing in players that he likes and people he likes. And, you know, when you talk about, like, we wouldn't, you know, it wouldn't be surprising to see Eric Wedge become part of this organization or, you know, Bud Black, guys like that, that, you know, Mark Shapiro has worked with in the past and that he likes. It wouldn't be surprising to see them take on roles, whether it's, you know, minor league coordinators or whatever you want, you know, some sort of upper level, you know, oversight positions. And those will be kind of the small moves I think you'll see immediately. But I think long term, Mark Shapiro absolutely wants to start rebuilding this franchise, this system in his, you know, vision. He's just kind of in a peculiar situation right now where he kind of has to invest in this group for one more year.
Yeah. And those changes might start from the inside out where he's going to have to find a GM at this point. And I would expect that one way or another, it'll be someone that Shapiro is familiar with. And maybe that's LaCava. Maybe it's not. Maybe they go back to the Indians. You have candidates there, Derek Falvey, Ross Atkins, guys in that front office. You could look around baseball because the Indians really have developed a lot of front office talent. Maybe one of those guys ends up returning to Shapiro's group and becoming the Blue Jays next GM.
Like Ross Atkins is a name that you're going to hear a lot coming up just because Shapiro is close with him. You know, I don't know. I jot down another couple. Maybe Josh Byrnes is another guy, or, you know, Tyrone Brooks, another guy that you know, have Shapiro connections and have been, you know, discussed for possible GM vacancies. And those could be guys that Mark Shapiro wants to go to. Kind of got the sense that, you know, Tony LaCava probably isn't long for the role.
Yeah. And he's being a complete team player in this. You know, he was saying that he's a Blue Jay. That's his role, and whatever Shapiro determines is the fit, then he's gonna be a team player. Although, yeah, I mean, Shapiro did not say whether or not LaCava would be a candidate for the permanent GM job. I don't know what to read into that exactly, but that was a spot where he could have said, yes, he will absolutely be a candidate. Yeah.
It would have been very easy to say that. Yep. Like, yes, obviously he'll be a candidate. He's the GM now.
Yeah.
Right?
That's what I expected him to say, honestly. And then he says, well, it's premature to say.
Yeah. So to not say it in a, like, where saying it would, you know, not cause you any trouble whatsoever kind of says something.
I think it does. But then again, we don't know Shapiro well enough to really know how to interpret his comments. Like, with Anthopoulos, we would have a much easier read on that kind of thing.
Fair. I don't know, you follow kind of the trackings of assistant GMs a lot more closely than most people. What's your kind of feel on who might be candidates for this job?
I think the guys you mentioned make sense. Yeah. I mean, I think that whether it's someone who he was working with recently, someone like Atkins, those guys could be candidates. But really, the thing that stands out to me is you have the GM opening in baseball, and it's going to be an incredibly appealing job.
Absolutely.
When you look at the talent that they have on the field and the sense that the Blue Jays are in a period of growth as a franchise, I really think they're going to have their pick. Anyone that they want, maybe not anyone, but a lot of people they want are going to have interest in this job. And so I fully expect that they're going to find someone very qualified.
I kind of fully expect Bud Black to be the manager of this franchise at some point, too. I kind of fully,
wow.
I feel like it's with him not getting that Nationals job in the middle of the night, I would not be surprised if he very quickly, you know, comes to the Blue Jays and is kind of the heir apparent to John Gibbons, who is an Anthopolis guy. Like, there's no two ways around it. And he's, John Gibbons, and like, you know, Gibby's Gibby. He knows the situation he's in. Like, he realized, you know, there's nobody more realistic about the politics of baseball than John Gibbons.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, because that'll be the first, it'll be so easy for Mark Shapiro to fire John Gibbons at some point during this season.
Sure would.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's yet another season of, you know what, you have to win or there's going to be that kind of hot seat pressure for Gibbons.
Guy can't catch a break. All season, everybody is talking about, is he going to get fired? And then he gets the team to the freaking ALCS, and it's just going to be the same thing again next year.
Yeah. But you know what? There are a lot worse places to be in when you look at the talent that he's going to be working with.
Yeah. He gets that nice little New Year's present of a fresh contract here.
The rest of us get a hangover.
Right?
He gets a new contract.
That's nice. Is there anything else to say about this? You know,
I have a question for you. So there's this notion that Troy Tulowitzki, and you've written about this extensively and very well at sportsnet.ca, there's a notion, and I think it's true, that he wasn't at his most comfortable in the course of the last couple months in Toronto. Now, some people take that and say, well, the Blue Jays should trade him or they should consider trading him. And I don't know. I'm not really there. So I'm wondering where you land on this.
What I don't see is the internal candidate to fill that hole.
And that's where I was going to go. You look at Ryan Goins, and man, he had an incredible season. He had some big hits. Walk-off home run, I think.
Yeah, I remember one for some reason.
And he,
Jesus,
he was showing tons of patience as the team went down the stretch. But I'm just reminded a little of Pete Cosma and the year he had in 2012 with the Cardinals when he had a 950 OPS for them and he hit well in the playoffs. And going into 2013, they made him their regular guy. Lo and behold, he hits .217 with a 548 OPS.
Right.
And not to say that Ryan Goins would do that. I do think he's legitimately taken some strides as an offensive player. But if you're asking him and Devin Travis, who keep in mind we've only seen for a few months at a time, if you're asking both of those guys to start up the middle for you, I don't know. I think that you run the risk of being disappointed with the production you get.
You're fine with the defense. I think it's the offense that you're unhappy with. And for Ryan Goins, who had a nice couple months, very, very good couple months, look at the aggregate of 2015, still a .672 OPS.
Yep, that's good.
Yeah. I was going to argue that maybe that's not the greatest.
It's not the greatest, but it's okay. Maybe good is overstating.
Yeah.
It's okay for a shortstop.
I was going to go the other way. Yeah, all right. Well, I should have looked up what the league average is for shortstops.
Say 690.
Yeah, 690.
Like
yeah, it's still below average.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Troy Tulowitzki is Troy Tulowitzki. And I think if Troy Tulowitzki plays the Toronto Blue Jays next year, he could be the best offensive shortstop in the American League.
Yes.
After Carlos Correa, maybe, right? I mean, who knows?
Yeah.
But
those two would be the start of the discussion.
Yeah, so the thing is, if Troy Tulowitzki isn't happy and he isn't comfortable, we've seen that can affect his production. It clearly did this year.
I thought it was a cracked shoulder blade that affected his production.
Well, before the shoulder blade, he was slumping as well, right? When he first came over to the Jays, he really didn't hit that well.
Yep.
And he really didn't show the Troy Tulowitzki that we have, you know, grown to know from Colorado in his first little stretch with the Jays there. And then the cracked shoulder blade, he kind of played better after the shoulder blade than he did before it, really.
Yeah.
Which is kind of strange. Interesting. We'll talk to John Morosi about this, but I do wonder what's going to happen with Tulo because where there's smoke, there's fire. There's a lot of people talking about whether it's a possibility to trade Troy Tulowitzki. I don't think it's the greatest move. I don't think you do either.
No.
But it's interesting that it's come up, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it is. I'm a little surprised that it has, but you know what? On the list of Blue Jays surprises in the course of the last few months, it ranks pretty low.
Well, here's the thing. If the Blue Jays are going to do what I think you would advocate for them to do and add a left-handed power bat to the lineup, if you're adding Jason Hayward, Chris Davis, whoever it may be, then perhaps you can lose a Troy Tulowitzki's production.
Yeah, I think it would make it more manageable anyways. But I've said before, I mean, I think there's no such thing as too much offense. League average, by the way, for shortstops, 682 OPS.
All right, so Ryan Goins only 10 points below. Yeah. Not bad. Ryan Goins, okay.
Yeah, it's fine.
What the defense makes it worth is what allows him to be a below average hitter.
Yeah, he had a good year. I'm just saying, banking on that and banking on Devin Travis having a good year at the same time, that's asking a lot.
The other thing we're saying is that, you know, a good year for Ryan Goins was below average offense, right? Yep. That was his good year, was below average. So, like, if he's not going to have his good year again, I mean, what is his normal going to be?
That's the question.
Yeah. Interesting. Interesting thought. Anything else on Shapiro?
I don't think so. Yeah. You know, it's going to be interesting because he has to juggle off-field considerations, like the front office. At the same time as he's getting to know the facility, at the same time as he's trying to make all these or coordinate with Tony on these option decisions,
right.
Qualifying offer decisions. There's a lot to juggle at once. I mean, there's really no rest. They have to hit the ground running here.
I think there's something I want to talk about is that there's a very like weird notion out there that like Mark Shapiro is this villain and he's like come into, you know, Toronto to, you know, railroad Alex Anthopoulos out of here and you know, that he's not. This is a very good baseball man. And when you look at a guy, like I look at Tony LaCava, who is a guy I really respect and really admire. And I think that he's like really intelligent, really thoughtful, really caring person, like a really high character guy in the game. And Tony LaCava says, I love working for Mark Shapiro. I think Mark Shapiro is great. So for him to say that, and I get that Mark Shapiro probably came off pretty cold and like pretty, political and pretty, you know, spinny and corporate in that press conference. But I mean, Rick Brace is sitting in the front row, you know, and it's his first day at school kind of, right? So he's got to make a good impression for the bosses and things like that. But I really do think Mark Shapiro is going to warm up and that fans are going to see a different side of him than maybe they've seen so far.
I think that even happened toward the end of the press conference.
Yeah.
When he started to joke around a little bit more and someone asked him, oh, you know, are you going to be okay with this payroll? I mean, it's not necessarily the biggest payroll in the league. And he's like, man, I came from Cleveland.
Came from Cleveland.
You know? Yeah. So I thought that he was starting to joke around a little bit. It's tough. Like you say, first day of school, I mean, there would be nerves for anyone. And it's, yeah. You know, all eyeballs are on you. You know, ultimately, like Grange said, you know, you win and people are going to accept what you do.
That comment was off camera. And he was, I mean, he was a lot more comfortable and joking and collegial, I guess, off camera than he was when he's sitting up on the podium. And it's an awkward situation, that podium that they put you on. Like, Marcus Stroman's one of my favorite guys to talk to in that clubhouse. And I've seen him get on that podium and even clam up a little bit, you know what I mean? And just like be a little bit hesitant because you're just sitting up there, you're above everybody for some reason. And there's, you know, 20 freaking cameras and all these lights and you can't really see what's in front of you. Like it's a strange
windowless room,
windowless, dark, you know, hollowed out, you know, canal of the Rogers Center. Like it's not a good time. So yeah, I do think that, you know, the tide's going to turn. I understand people are upset that Alex Anthopoulos isn't here anymore. And, you know, there's a fair argument to be made that Alex Anthopoulos perhaps was not treated very well in his exit from this franchise. But I think Mark Shapiro, honestly, is a very well-respected guy in baseball. And I think that's gotten lost here is that, like, this is a very good move for the organization.
Yep.
It really is. And it's too bad that Alex Anthopoulos was collateral damage. It really is. But it is a good move.
Yep. No, I think you put it well. Like, it's too bad that it comes with Anthopoulos' departure because that's a loss. That's a big loss for
absolutely.
The Blue Jays. But also adding Shapiro, he's very well-established, well-connected, baseball person, and I think that we'll see how that unfolds. I mean, I'm going to be interested to see who he hires as the GM because I think that'll tell us something about the kind of front office he wants to have.
It'll be interesting to see how he kind of streamlines his operation and how he, you know, modernizes it and what he does, you know, just to kind of bring the Blue Jays up. Because I don't think it's that much of a secret that maybe the Blue Jays drop behind other franchises in Major League Baseball in terms of running a modern front office.
How, in what way?
You know, I'm not entirely comfortable elaborating on sure. On the specifics there, but I do think that, you know, that's something that's kind of been whispered about in the game quite a bit that, you know, I don't think you would disagree that.
Well, here's what I do get the impression that Shapiro is just, maybe this is, it's so hard to know, right? Because we've only seen this one, one press conference of him in a Blue Jays context.
Right.
But I get the sense that he's going to be quite analytically sound and quite analytically driven. And Anthopoulos has that side to him as well, but he's also got a strong scouting side. Shapiro, of course, a player development guy. So any executive in the game is going to have both. You don't see a lot of high-ranking executives who are one-dimensional these days. The template is to be well-rounded, and both these guys fit that. But I get the sense that Shapiro is going to be very analytically driven in his decision-making.
Mark Shapiro got asked a lot of questions about what the Blue Jays franchise currently and what he's inheriting. I didn't hear him speak as glowingly about anyone as he did about Joe Sheehan. Maybe about Tony LaCava, but he had to. He's his interim GM. But he spoke really glowingly about Joe Sheehan, who is kind of like the Blue Jays analytics guru. You know, he's their baseball research and development manager is his official title. And he's like, yeah, he's their analytics guy. And I think Mark Shapiro was very impressed with him. And I do think that Mark Shapiro wants to move the Blue Jays towards a more analytics bent than they have been over recent years.
One interesting thing to keep in mind as well is that another Blue Jays analyst, Jason Parra, was hired from the Indians and joined the Blue Jays. So that
very
tells you a little bit of overlap there.
Very interesting. Interesting days indeed for the Toronto Blue Jays. We will talk about what the Blue Jays might do now in free agency now that they are, under being run by Mark Shapiro and Tony LaCava rather than Paul Beeston and Alex Anthopoulos. We'll talk about that with John Morosi of Fox Sports after this on At the Letters.
Here's a 3-2 to Moustakas. In the air to center.
It continues on At the Letters, Arden Zwelling with Ben Nicholson-Smith, Sportsnet.ca, and iTunes, as always. We are joined, very happy to be joined by John Morosi of Fox Sports. And for this week, I guess a temporary honorary Canadian. He was at the Maple Leafs game last night. How are you enjoying Toronto this week, John?
It's great as always, Arden. Thanks for having me on the show, to you and Ben. And yeah, it's been a great week already, and continuing my march toward. I'm not sure I'm quite there yet, but I'm working hard to be that honorary Canadian.
We'd be happy to have you. I think that the big news today. I mean, everyone was caught a little bit off guard by how things developed with the Nationals last night, with how Dusty Baker all of a sudden ended up as the manager of that team. It was kind of thought it was a done deal with Bud Black. Now, I wouldn't be surprised if Bud Black ended up with the Blue Jays, frankly, just because of his connections to Mark Shapiro. What's kind of your sense of how exactly this all went down?
Yeah, I think certainly I was under the impression last week that Bud Black to the Nationals was in fact a done deal, and it sounds as though perhaps the issue was financial in terms of the negotiations, and that ownership stepped in, and it appears at this point in time, I should emphasize, that Dusty will probably be a little bit lower of a price tag than Bud Black was going to be, and that's why Dusty Baker now has his third Major League managerial stop. And certainly, I think Dusty had done enough to deserve another chance. I know, obviously, there had been some criticism of him in the past with how he handled pitching, but the reality is that not a lot of managers in the game have gotten three different franchises to the playoffs as he has done. So I think on that end of things, Dusty is certainly deserving, but it is perplexing because I really think Bud Black is one of the best baseball people in the whole business, and I think I find it hard to believe that not one of the 30 teams will want to have Bud Black in a dugout managing their ball club at some point in time very soon. Obviously, as we know, only one other team has currently a vacancy. That's the Dodgers. I guess we'll see what becomes of the Toronto possibility. I think that's a great call on your part, Arden. I think that obviously there had been some conversation, according to what I've been told, between the Jays and Bud Black, obviously under Mark Shapiro's direction, about what possible role he could have maybe in the front office somewhere. But obviously, that would create a bit of an uncomfortable circumstance if you've got a major league manager, a proven major league manager, who has a very strong connection to Mark Shapiro, sort of looming there as a special assistant. Obviously, if there were to ever come a time when John Gibbons got replaced, so that would be a somewhat of an awkward situation, but certainly one that I think is very possible because of, you know, certainly Mark Shapiro's relationship with Bud Black, but also Bud Black's qualifications. I mean, he's a very appealing baseball guy to have in your organization because of his pitching knowledge, because he could really function as a front office person, which he did for Mark Shapiro in Cleveland, and also, of course, he is a potential manager as well. So I think there's a lot of reasons why we could hear about the Jays potentially courting Bud Black here in the days to come.
Hey, John, when you look at the Blue Jays roster, it's pretty clear that they need some starting pitching, and when you look at Mark Shapiro's track record, it's pretty clear that he hasn't traditionally been all that of an aggressive bidder on free agent pitching. So do you expect that to change now that he is working with a bigger payroll, or how do you expect him to address this need for pitching?
That's a great question, Ben. I think that you look at the way he has done it in the past, as you say, he has certainly been more the lower cost route. He has not gone big on free agent pitching. I think that when he spoke at his press conference, I think it was somewhat telling that he said two things. Number one, that he is open to greater risk. Risk tolerance, I think, was the phrase he used. And I think that really is a euphemism for free agency in general. I think that with a payroll that's now twice as large as what he had to work with in Cleveland, he is going to be able to take more risks. That's just a fact. And I think he will adapt his style a little bit to that. The other thing he said that I thought was really interesting, that was sort of, I think, sort of nuanced, that came up during the course of the conversation, or the press conference rather, on Monday, which was that he felt as though basically that the farm system is in good shape, but effectively needs to be fortified, needs to have that upper level depth addressed. Sort of a roundabout way of saying Alex Anthopoulos took away from that depth to make the trades that he did in July, and now we have to find a way to replenish that. Well, the one way you can replenish that in the near term is by trading a piece off your major league club to give yourself more young, controllable pieces. Now, that's not always easy to do, but I think the one thing the Jays have is they've got a lot of bats. And I wonder if at some point in time, I'm a little suspicious about how much of a market value even a Bautista Encarnacion would have, because it's just 1 year of control. But maybe a Troy Tulowitzki. You put him out there and you see what he could fetch, assuming, of course, Devin Travis is healthy, and then you could have a middle infield of Goins and Travis, and you flip Tulo for some young pitching. I think you can see that happen. So I think that's all. Those are all possibilities. And one thing I think you see too, Ben, is when a new president or GM comes in, they're not really beholden to the moves the previous GM made. So if Mark Shapiro trades Tulo, it's not as though, oh my gosh, how can you possibly trade a guy months after acquiring him? Well, Mark Shapiro didn't trade for him. So he can just look at his roster and make trades and moves based on the assets as he sees them before him. And I think a Tulowitzki trade might actually make a little bit of sense given the overall totality of the circumstances.
How about that? That would be something. Troy Tulowitzki with a very short tenure in Toronto.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, I think the one thing about Tulo, too, is, you know, he had the injury late. I remember I talked to him in New York late in the season over a weekend there, and he, you could just tell he still hasn't totally settled in. And I think that he was jilted by the trade. I think that really shook him up a little bit, and I think he was still almost processing what had happened even as the season was coming to a close. So I think that if he were traded, knowing, of course, he lives in Las Vegas, I'm sure if you gave him the truth serum right now and you said, okay, Troy, are you okay, of course, knowing, understanding, and now that, of course, he has the no-trade clause, would you be okay with getting traded to a West Coast-based team or just a Western Division team that would allow you to spend more time at your home in Las Vegas, maybe have spring training in Arizona? I'm sure he would sign up for that immediately. I think that would be a no-brainer for him. So what happens from there, who knows, but I do think it's something that certainly Mark Shapiro and Tony LaCava as the interim GM have to think about here in the coming weeks.
You also, you mentioned, you know, Mark Shapiro said yesterday that, you know, having a bigger payroll gives you a bit of a, more of a tolerance for risk. And, you know, Mark Shapiro also said he's, you know, generally operate as a risk adverse guy, but, you know, this changes now because he's going to have almost double the payroll that he had before. Could you see him being a player in free agency even this winter? I mean, the Blue Jays obviously need to add pitching this winter, but I mean, you know, the high priced options, the ones that you'd want, are going to be pretty expensive. Could you see him being a player in that market?
Yeah, I think on one level or another, he's going to have to. And I think that actually what I would do, again, this is, you know, easy for me to say, not my money. I actually think I would make a more serious play to get Marco Estrada signed than Price. I think Price is not coming back to Toronto, in my opinion. I think he's going to go to one of the major markets in the U.S., probably a National League team like the Cubs or the Cardinals or the Dodgers or the Giants. I just think that's where his mind is right now. And I think it's nothing against Toronto. I just think that's what he's going to do. So I think that being the case, I would go full court press, try to get Estrada signed because of what he meant to that staff. I think that he, I think without him, the Jays do not win the division. I think he was an absolutely essential member of that staff, and you saw it in the playoffs how good he was in the playoffs. So, I think I would sign him back, and then pick up Dickey's option, and then you're not as desperate. Then you're not as desperate to get that next pitcher. Mark spoke about really having to address two different vacancies in the rotation. That's probably fair, but I also think that I have some doubts about Sanchez being able to transition back to being a starter, and even Stroman. I think there's going to have to be some care taken with him. I mean, knowing that obviously he's coming off a season in which he barely pitched, and to all of a sudden bounce his innings all the way back up to 200 a year or whatever the Jays would like to do, to me that would be maybe a bit ambitious. So I think they almost need to get an extra swing guy or just some additional fortification for that pitching staff, because I just think it would be a little too risky to just add even one or two starting pitchers. I think they should try to add as much as they can, and then acknowledge that maybe after throwing all those pitches this year, they may need a bit more depth here to handle 2016.
On the offensive side, they have a great offensive team, best in baseball, but if you wanted to nitpick, you could point out the fact that they are very right-handed. Am I crazy, John, for looking at free agents like Alex Gordon or Jason Hayward or Chris Davis and thinking that in some scenarios, those are guys who could help make the 2016 Blue Jays better?
Sure. I think that's very, very possible. I think Hayward makes sense. Again, as long as I think these guys are going to be in play, so long as the possibility of trading a Bautista or an Encarnacion are on the table. Because I think then, I think that when you look at the Jays and the way that they've constructed their team, I think Revere, you wouldn't want to replace him in left field because you've already now got a guy that can play left field and bats left-handed and can be a sort of a creative offensive player. Pilar, I think he demonstrated his value on both sides of the ball this year. So then the question comes right field/DH and how you're going to handle that. Again, I think that you have to consider those free agent options, but only if you feel like you can find a place for Bautista to be traded. And again, knowing, of course, there's only 1 year left on Bautista's contract, I understand for everybody it would be hard to imagine the Jays without Bautista, just like it's hard to imagine them without Alex Anthopoulos. But the reality is, at some point in the next couple of years, that's probably going to happen because his contract's coming up. So I think they should take a serious look at what his market value would be, what kind of team would maybe make a play for him and would be comfortable with 1 year of obligation for him and has the prospects to make it worth the Jays' while. And then if it happens, that's how you put your budget to work, your additional free agent spending money to work, because then you look at it and say, well, I didn't just sign Jason Hayward, I signed Jason Hayward, and I also obtained pitchers X and Y and Z because then I was able to trade Jose Bautista. I think you have to think of the overall off-season roster matrix in sort of two dimensions in that way, things you could do to buy, things you could do to sell. And I think the smart GMs and the smart presidents of baseball operations or presidents of franchises think in those planes all the time and are able to constantly address the present and then the near future all at the same time. And I think that's something Mark Shapiro will want to do. The question is how well will he be able to execute that, and does he have in-house, whether it's Tony LaCava or does he have to find someone else outside that would help him execute that mission this year and then going forward?
When you look at this free agent, you know, starting pitcher market, how do you kind of see this unfolding? Is there one big domino to fall, or are there too many kind of top tier guys out there? Could a lot of money get eaten up? You know, are there, is you know, the smart play going to be to look at kind of second tier guys that might come cheaper than they would in previous years? How do you see this shaping up?
Yeah, I think in terms of second tier guys, it's really interesting to me that you look at an Edinson Volquez, and there's not a lot of conversation about him, nor was there about Liriano with Pittsburgh. And when you talk about what they've done in free agency the last couple of years, there's value there. There's value to be had. And I think some organizations, for whatever reason, overlook that. I'm not really sure why, but I think that there are values out there that actually are more conducive to maybe getting the better return on your investment than perhaps shelling out all the money the Cubs did for John Lester. And certainly, even though that ended up being a fine investment here in year one, but certainly what the Padres did with James Shields, he had a really rough season. He gave up a ton of home runs in a park where you're not supposed to be able to do that. So that was a very strange a series of events there for James Shields. And so I think it was very instructive as to sometimes the whether it's the numbers or sort of what the overall general baseball assessment of a free agent class tends to be, there are still inefficiencies in players that aren't properly valued. I think you look at Edinson Volquez was a reasonable, very reasonable contract as a free agent, and then Chris Young, a guy who's hugely important to the Royals in winning the World Series. Did not have a job in early March because he had a health history from a standpoint of shoulder surgeries, even though he's been much healthier for now a number of years. And then, of course, the fact he doesn't throw hard. So there are these biases that sort of get built in there, I think, in the industry that I'm not really sure why, against whether it was guys that had command troubles earlier in their careers, or the case of Young, a guy that doesn't throw very hard. And so there are bargains out there. I think that it's funny because as the industry, you know, becomes slightly more uniform in its analytical bend, it's almost now to the point where, well, everybody's operating out of a similar playbook, and there are other things that are undervalued. And Chris Young is a guy that was undervalued immeasurably by by more sabermetric types, as is Marco Estrada undervalued, I think, and will probably continue to be undervalued. But he's a guy that we have watched what he has done for the Blue Jays, and his value to me is self-evident, and I think the Jays would be very wise to sign him back, even knowing that he's probably going to cost, I don't know, maybe 20%, maybe even less than that, 15, 10, 15% of what David Price is going to get in total dollars. So I would recommend that wholeheartedly, and then sort of take your chances. If the luxury item falls into your lap afterward, do it. But I think now you've got to be aggressive, and you've got to find ways to upgrade your rotation with sort of that mid-tier group.
Just to follow up on Estrada there, Ben and I have had this debate quite a bit recently. Would you qualify Marco Estrada? Would you at least give him that qualifying offer? Yeah,
I think it's a no-brainer. And I realize it's not my $15.8 million, Arden, but yeah. I would do it for a couple reasons. Number one, psychologically, this is now, what, year four of this is about to start the fourth offseason of the new CBA.
Yes.
And we have not had a single player ever accept the qualifying offer. Psychologically, again, the reason for that is very simple. No agent in this business, not a single agent, wants to tell his client on November 6th, you know what, 1 year is the best I can do for you. That's all I got, 1 year. Now, 1 year at $15.8 million is a lot of money. And if you believe in yourself, then, yeah, take the money and then go out and do it again the next year. But for whatever reason, I shouldn't say for whatever reason, for a very logical reason, there are players that are willing to maybe accept a three-year $13 million or 3 years $14 million, less than the AAV because they feel like they want to get the better guarantee. So we've seen some players get stung by the qualifying offer, and it's really had a negative effect on them. So I think if I'm Estrada, I would certainly have to think long and hard about accepting it. And if I'm the Jays, I certainly offer it because I just think the value of his innings is huge. And if I can bring back Dickey and Estrada for the next year at a total of less than $30 million, I'm going to do it and be happy about it because I feel like it's to me or right around $30 million. To me, that's about the right price for the reliability they would give you.
Interesting. So you would offer Estrada the qualifying offer. Do you think, knowing what you do about Shapiro and the way he operates, do you expect that he will?
You know, great question, Ben. I think that he, you know, he has not had a situation where he's had many players that fall into this category in Cleveland, and then also have a situation where the payroll accommodates the possibility of tendering the qualifying offer and then dealing with the consequences if in fact they keep him. I just think for me, I think they should. I tend to think that they will, just because that's the price of pitching. I think that also the more pitching you have, I'm a believer that if the more pitching you have at the start of the off season, I think it will improve your bargaining position with teams and trades, with other agents on free agents. If you have on your roster a better, a situation where you are not desperate to add a starting pitcher, that's always a really bad place to be. Desperate to add a starting pitcher. I think you saw the Jays go through it a couple spring trainings ago with Irvin Santana and how that whole drama went. That was a kind of a different story a little bit, but man, that was a real dramatic situation for them to go through. So I think that you're almost better served making a slightly above market offer. If you feel like Estrada's maybe worth $14 million a year, but you're going to give him the 15.8, do it. Because I really think that whatever extra money you're spending on that, you might actually be able to save on the back end with your negotiating position with other clubs in trades and also with other agents on free agents.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. I think the Mets showed that there's no such thing as having too much pitching. Even having John Neese out of the bullpen, it doesn't hurt to have extra arms around, even though personally I probably wouldn't qualify Estrada.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the Mets, and you saw the layers there, and I think also, again, I circle back to Stroman and Sanchez. I think that you've got to find a way to incorporate what could be relatively low innings numbers from them, especially in the case of Sanchez. I'm still not convinced that being a starting pitcher is the best thing for him. I think Stroman obviously has proven that it is for him, but again, with the lack of innings that Stroman has thrown this year, I think that you maybe want to just give yourself some insurance that way. If you want to back off him next year, you can. So I think that's. But you're right. The Mets showed it. The Royals showed it with guys in the case of the Royals with certainly Young and Morales and Medlin and Duffy. It's obviously different in the playoffs because you don't have the full five-man rotation, so you can move a guy like Duffy into the bullpen. But again, you saw the Royals. It wasn't just the excellence at the very end of the game with Davis. It was a pretty good setup crew as well that was able to give them length at key times. So I think you're right. I think that we've seen in this copycat industry certain ways that teams have put their clubs together. And right now, I think it's true now. It was true in 2015. It's going to be true in 2016 about the importance of pitching.
I'm with you, John. The line's been drawn in the sand because you and I would qualify Marco Estrada. Ben would not. I'm not scared about him accepting it. He becomes an asset. And if, we might get to a situation if the Blue Jays are, again, if they're 50 and 51 again at midseason, we might see them tear it down this time instead of push all in. And then Marco Estrada becomes somewhat of an attractive trade chip.
So that's a great call, and I think that's one thing that as we assess the tenure of Alex Anthopoulos, and Estrada's part of it, and it was a very good trade that he made last year for Adam Lind. But I think overall, you look at the health of this team's payroll, and I think the fact that Jose Reyes' contract is gone, there is not really a bad contract on the books. They've done a very good job, I think, of controlling those obligations, to the point that obviously Martin is still under contract for a number of years. Donaldson, we think, could get a contract extension here in the next year or so. But for the most part, there is a lot of money coming off the books after this coming season and or arbitration eligibility. But the point is they've got flexibility. Alex Anthopoulos really did a good job of building a flexible roster that doesn't have a lot of bad money on it, that I think now Mark Shapiro and whoever he hires will soon be the beneficiaries of Alex's good planning.
John, informative stuff as always. Thank you so much for joining us. Enjoy the rest of your week in our great country.
I'm having a great week. I'm hoping to squeeze in one more hockey game before I depart. Unfortunately, I probably can't stay long enough, though, to see the Wings and the Leafs there Friday at the ACC, but I will probably try to tune that one in from home back in Michigan.
Nice. Thanks, John.
My pleasure.
If I become a candidate, I'm certainly open to that, but it's not essential for me to want to be here. I want to be here with the Blue Jays. I've been here 13 years, and I want to continue to do that, one way or the other.
All right, our thanks to John Morosi of Fox Sports for joining us today on At The Letters. Follow John on Twitter, at John Morosi. Always plenty of interesting insight. We have some Blue Jays news to offer you that is just broken while we're recording here at ATL headquarters. Blue Jays doing what you'd expect them to do, exercising their club options on Jose Bautista, who will make $14 million in 2016, R.A. Dickey, who will make $12 million in 2016, and Edwin Encarnacion, who will make just $10 million in 2016. And the Blue Jays have also declined their option on Meiser Isturiz. Nothing out of the ordinary, nothing you wouldn't expect here, Ben. Pretty, this is what was going to happen.
Bautista and Encarnacion were the easiest option decisions in baseball. I am pretty sold on that. Meiser Isturiz might have been a close runner-up. And R.A. Dickey was the one borderline decision. But I think, you know, you look at the 200 innings, makes sense.
No, absolutely. He's worth that money. And you could still Adam Lindham if you really wanted to, if you don't want him to be. But the Blue Jays really need starting pitching. 200 innings would be very nice. And it's kind of ridiculous to think that Jose Bautista and Edwin Encarnacion combined will make $24 million.
Yeah, it's a testament to those extensions signed by Anthopoulos. You know, I think those are some of his better moves.
Absolutely. So, you know, stay tuned to, sportsnet.ca for Ben, Shy, my work, Grange, Blair, Brunt, everybody. We'll be following all this stuff over the next week. There's more stuff to follow. There's qualifying offer decisions that have to be made by Friday. Lots of duck skin in a row as the Blue Jays head into the GM meetings at Boca Raton. Ben will be there, sportsnet.ca, as will Shai Davidi. So we'll be doing a podcast next week. We'll get Ben on from Florida and get all that juicy insight, as I'm sure the rumor mill will have gotten started by then.
Yeah. Well, at that point, teams can talk to any free agent. So it'll be full-fledged rumor time.
We like the rumors. So yeah, there'll be an ATL next week. And as long as there's Blue Jays news to discuss, there'll be an ATL. One other thing to mention is Pitch Talks. The show is coming up on November the 10th in Montreal. I'll be there. Ben won't be there, but Mike Wilner will be there. Chris Knuckles Nealon will be there. Dave Palmer, hosted by Jonah Carey. Should be a good night. And then 2 days later in Toronto, me and Ben will both be at Pitch Talks at 918 Bathurst Center for Culture. You can buy your tickets at pitchtalksbaseball.com. They're $20 a pop, although there are some promo codes floating around out there. On Twitter, definitely look for those. Ben and I will be talking to Christina Rutherford. We'll be taking questions, doing ATL. Also on that panel, Jonah Carey again, Stephen Brunt, Jamie Campbell, Sid Sixero, some very entertaining personalities are going to be, some stuff's going to get said.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. Those things are always a lot of fun.
Absolutely. We'll be there. And then from there, Pitch Talks is going on the road. They're going to Hamilton, Waterloo, and London, Ontario. Ben is doing Hamilton and London. Hometown boy.
Exactly. London, that is.
The homecoming, yeah, for Ben, going back to London. I'll be doing Waterloo in London. So, you know, come up and if you're an ATL fan in those areas, come on out, come up and say hi to us. You know, let us know that you like it.
Yeah, it's not hi for sure.
Maybe you don't. Who knows? Yeah, come up and say hi, and we'll be there. Come out to those shows. They're always good fun and good baseball talk and a pretty cool little community that Kevin Kennedy's created there.
Baseball talk all year long. That's one of the best things about Pitch Talks.
Yeah. No, it never ends. And stay tuned to sportsnet.ca. Anything to plug?
Yeah. Just the usual. Yeah. Keep checking it out. And as long as there's Blue Jays news, which seems to be a constant in our lives, then definitely we'll have that covered.
No lack of Blue Jays news. That's it for us. My thanks to John Morosi. My thanks to our producers, Sam _Alton_McKee on Twitter. My thanks to Ben Nicholson Smith at Ben Nicholson Smith on Twitter. My name's Arden Zwelling. I am at Arden Zwelling on Twitter. This has been a jam-packed episode. We have another one for you next Tuesday on At The Letters.